Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Killett, your host, ready to have tons of fun today because we usually do the flannel panel on Friday. Won't be able to do it on Friday this week, and did want to do our monthly flannel panel while our good friend Joe Heschmeyer was here in town with us. So we're doing the flannel panel today. And if you don't know what the flannel panel is, we all dress up in flannel shirts and we talk about the news from a Catholic perspective for a couple hours. You're allowed to call and get in on the conversation. We won't promise that you'll get in on the conversation, but we'll try our best to talk with whoever calls. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. I don't want to make any promises because sometimes it's kind of a freewheeling conversation we have. We have had people tell us, and they've just straight out told us, that's the best thing I've ever heard on the radio. Those people are in the minority, but we have had people tell us that about the flannel panel.
Two of them.
Again, the number 888-318-7884. Sitting here with me in studio, Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. Hi, Chris.
I think two of those people were my parents.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Who said that?
Is that a flannel? That's a real flannel?
No, this is, but yeah. I don't think our colleague actually is.
No, Joe.
I was afraid I was going to get called. This is more plaid than flannel.
That's
use those words kind of interchangeably, but apparently they don't mean the same thing.
Apologist Joe Heschmeyer, their author recently of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, doesn't know the difference between plaid and flannel.
Can he be on the panel today?
He's the reason it's a flannel panel.
I know.
Because we thought that all he had was flannel shirts, so we thought we would accompany him. You know, from Pope Francis, we got the idea of accompaniment for those who wear flannel. Yes. And now he's wearing plaid, and he thinks it's flannel.
So it turns out I'm deeply confused.
He's had like 3 years of seminary and law school.
Notably does not involve distinguishing between flannel and plaid. You don't wear
flannel and flaid.
Oh, there it is. Spoonerism.
Very good.
So you don't wear either of those, flannel or plaid.
I see some priests who wear plaid, and I wish they would not. Just wear the clerics. Come on.
Wait, where are you seeing them?
Barbecue.
It's okay to wear. Wait, you think that you'll wear clerics to the barbecue?
I do. Yeah.
I wouldn't say I disagree with you, but I mean, what?
Yeah, it's more of a border case, but I would agree. I also I think this is with all intended respect. You take a group of celibate men with no one in their life to tell them what does not look good together. And when they're not choosing, you know, if you're not going with clerics, you're choosing your own clothes. And as a guy who's occasionally in a hotel room by myself trying to figure out if something clashes.
Yeah.
We're not the sex famously good at pairing clothes.
Your wife doesn't pack for you?
She does, and I forget what she packs for which days.
She could put like a little...
I know, she needs to pack. She overassumes my intelligence.
Have you ever heard of Garanimals? She should just get you Garanimals. Am I the only one here who's heard of Garanimals? It used to be a clothing line for children where, like, the clothes that match would have the same animal on the tag. So you would just
genius.
Go, I'll put a lion pair of pants with a lion shirt, and then you know, alligator pants with alligator shirt.
So true story about wives packing for husbands. By the way, Jackie does not pack for me.
Nor does my wife pack for me.
Absolutely not. No. I would not permit that.
But she does close the door as I'm leaving. And I hear it locked behind me, but I don't get to be packing.
Yes. Francis Chesterton packed for GK for his trips.
Oh, yeah?
And he was in America one time, and going through a suitcase, and there were no pajamas. And so he got back to England, and she asked how the trip went, and she said to him, or he said to her, well, you forgot to pack my pajamas. And she said, oh, I'm sorry, but just why didn't you go to the store and buy some? And he said, I didn't know that was something you could buy at the store.
that bad, for the record.
I think we have Dale Alquist on next week
ask him to verify that story.
One of the world's great Chesterton scholars, yeah.
Yeah, but you can, in fact, buy pajamas at the store.
I want to know what he did.
What did he think?
You have to go
to the Jammy Guild or something to get the pajamas? Like where he thought this was like a distributist thing?
There probably was a medieval guild.
I don't think anyone's going to call in today and be like, this is better than Catholic stuff.
Yes. Sorry,
I need Gilbert Chiefs. Gilbert Keith stuff on pajamas.
Yeah. By the way, this is the G.K. Chesterton studio we are in. We rarely say that, and we should probably say it more, because he's in the long line of people who are like the giants on whose shoulders we want to stand.
But he's a great apologist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, he is.
And he's, you know, Newman, then Chesterton, and then C.S. Lewis. Doesn't this feel like slight decline each time. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm not taking the bait on that one. Right. I love Lewis. I'm
I love
sucker.
All three of them.
I love Lewis, which is like liking four chord songs where you're like, yeah, of course you do, but don't you're not proud of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the only thing about C.S. Lewis is he's kind of non-liturgical. He's not the liturgy is not a part of his Christianity in the way that it would be for Chesterton or Newman.
You know, that's largely true, but he has some really good stuff on why the priest, even in Anglicanism, celebrates Ad Orientem.
Oh, he does?
He does. He talks about, this is his argument against women's ordination, that the woman can pray with her back to the congregation towards God, because there she's representing us to Christ, or us to the Father, rather. But when she turns around and as priest is standing as Christ to us, something is lost at the sign value.
I think this does not really work.
Go on.
Altogether. Leave it there.
Want to do some news?
I have recommended, if anybody wants to know what's going on in the world right now, at least read the third.
That Hideous Strength.
In the so-called science fiction trilogy. Yeah. That's the one book to read to know what's going on right now.
Obviously, it's just while we're on C.S. Lewis, though, I mean, the grace of God working through C.S. Lewis is unbelievable.
Yes.
The power of what he has written, what it has meant to people in bringing people and keeping people within the Christian faith is extraordinary. I don't think there's anybody like him in the last century.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I mean, just by the power of the written word. Can you think of anybody like that?
No.
He's certainly better known than Chesterton. I don't think he's quite the mind.
Well, I would say the same thing about Ronald Knox.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I think Knox is doing a similar project and is better at it, but he doesn't have the same popularity as Lewis.
Yeah, I think something like the Screwtape Letters and then, of course, Narnia, which really are children's books.
The Chronicles of Narnia are explicitly children's books.
Yeah, but they, I mean...
They're
a little didactic.
I want to get on the news. I want to get on to the news.
I liked them, but yes.
What, the Chronicles of Narnia?
I was,
life-changing. As an 11-year-old,
I read them young enough that I didn't
catch... Over the moon for them.
I didn't catch that Aslan was Jesus. And having revisited them as an adult, I'm like, really?
Oh, look at that. That's amazing.
It's shocking to me that it flew over my head.
That's funny. I remember being on Cape Cod explaining to my grandmother these books that were an allegory for the life of Jesus, and the lion was Jesus, and she's just looking at me like, what are you talking about? the Supreme Court, we'll start with the Supreme Court. They have not given us the Dobbs decision. Apparently, Chief Justice John Roberts is waiting for at least one other justice to be killed before he'll get this job. Maybe that's exaggerating, but it does seem that it's dangerous at this point. Just get the thing out.
Yeah, it's not becoming less controversial with the passage of time. I mean, it does make you wonder, what's the rush? What's the wait? What are they doing? Yeah. If they're just trying to bide their time so they can release it and get out of town, I think that's backfiring dramatically.
Yeah.
It may be that there are some final touches they're putting on it, and we just don't understand.
So as a clarification, either of you can tell me, this is Robert's decision when to release it, or they agree as a court when to release it?
I don't know that there's a law or even a rule about it. I think there's a custom that the chief decides it. But I would imagine that the majority could release it if they wanted to.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would assume that's the case, but I don't actually know.
No.
Because the majority opinion is released with the dissents.
Yeah.
So it isn't like the majority is just acting independently of the dissenting opinions. Everything's released all at once. But I don't know enough about how the sausage is made to know how
but
that
is,
scheduling
is. There is
happens.
A process, too, to just say, here's what the decision was. The reasoning is coming later. Like you could say... You know, do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
But they didn't do that.
They didn't do that. And also, when you publish it, you don't just have the majority and the dissenting and any concurrences. You also have a syllabus of the case that kind of neatly summarizes.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of stuff that happens between when you write the majority opinion and when it actually goes to print, so to speak, when it's published.
All right. Well, but in the meantime, the Supreme Court is giving us other decisions, and one about it. The funding of schools in Maine. And I do want to talk to you about that because some interesting stuff. It's interesting reading what the media makes of the court's decision in this case and the way that some people apparently understand, I don't know if it's right to say that they understand the idea of separation of church and state. Are they just doing propaganda, or are they attempting to actually understand what this country has meant by the separation of church and state, which of course is not even a constitutional phrase. It's a Jeffersonian phrase, but we'll get to that right after this.
Private correspondence.
To Baptists, I think. Yeah. We'll talk about what the decision was and what a Catholic perspective is on the funding of schools with state money right after this on Catholic Answers Live. It's the Flannel Panel right back after this.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Are you ready to spread your wings? Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with exclusive news, program information, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. To sign up, go to EWTN.com, click subscribe, enter your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. Get your wings today. It's the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. It's the Flannel Panel today when we get together with two really big minds and me in between them, so to speak. Not physically in between them today, but keeping them separated from off of one another's throats, in other words. When we talk about the news of the day, yes, that's my job, is to keep you from...
Are you usually the middle ground between us?
I'm actually not. Chris says that I am... You call me a lefty or something like that.
I mean it in a nice way.
You mean lefty in a nice way?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good. I think you're a radical right winger, but I mean that in the nicest way.
Sure. I get it.
All right, so the Supreme Court. I want to read you a little bit because this will prove I'm not a lefty. This was appeared in The Nation magazine.
which he reads every day.
It comes to my doorstep.
Published in Madison, Wisconsin. Right?
Ellie Mistal.
Or was that The Progressive?
I don't know where The Nation is published.
That you thought he might know that, though. That was a...
Yeah, right.
I have no idea.
Maybe it's The Progressive.
Okay, so but the Supreme Court strikes another blow to the separation of church and state, according to Ellie Mistal, who we have quoted on this program before. Also on Focus, we have quoted him. And he hasn't quite made the
We list. Should send him a case of wine.
I know, because he provides us with so much programming. He does not approve of what the Supreme Court decided. Joe, could you just give us a couple-sentence synopsis of what happened in Maine?
So the question was, if you're giving money... for students to go to private schools at a state level, can you require that it only be non-religious private schools?
Yeah, and in the case of Maine, there was not a public middle or high school alternative in these neighborhoods or districts or something like that.
So it's only for school districts that don't operate
their
own.
Because there's very rural parts of Maine.
Right, where there was not a public school available.
And I don't think that the schools who sued were Catholic schools, but they were Christian schools. And they said, "Well, why can't the kids come here?" And the government said, "No, because you're a religious school and you have to be non-sectarian." And the Supreme Court essentially said, "Well, how is that not just bigotry against religious schools? How is that just not
right.
anti-religious bigotry?" And six of them agreed that it was. So,
it was a very kind of predictable 6-3. In this case, it's going to be. If there's a 6-3 decision in Dobbs, it'll be the same 6-3.
Yeah, right.
And so it's one of those kind of depressingly predictable sort of set of dissents, I would argue.
Yeah, I have to say, Joe, I don't find it that depressing because we're obviously a profoundly divided society. And
Those divisions are reflected in our institutions.
Right. But I would say I don't think it's bad that we're divided. I don't think it's bad that people take different sides on different questions. But when people take the same different sides, when it's the same teams, whether we're dealing with vouchers or abortion or fill in the blank, that is not a sign of intellectual vivacity and health.
Actually, this doesn't sound to me like a decision only likely to have come out of the court in its current makeup. It's basically vouchers. Right. Yeah. There have been voucher cases before the court before, haven't there?
In fact, Breyer lost a similar 2002 case, so literally 20 years ago, using the same reasoning about how you can't do this early to sectarian violence, and then there wasn't 20 years of sectarian violence, and then he's still making the same arguments that aren't true.
What about this argument, Joe? Because Ali Mistal makes this argument, and I will read what he said in a second, but the argument goes like this. It says there can be no establishment of religion. That's a constitutional provision, no establishment of religion. If the state of Maine pays a Christian school to educate rural children because there's no public school around, then that's establishing a religion.
Yeah, so actually, I understand the argument. It doesn't work for this reason. Let's just step back. The Establishment Clause, the way it's been interpreted by the Supreme Court, is that you can't favor one denomination or religion over another.
Can we go back a little bit, though? Can we first say that the Establishment Clause bound the federal government?
Yes.
It didn't. It did not.
But it was incorporated by the 14th Amendment.
Doesn't believe that. But
you guys lost that war.
We keep running afoul of that. Bad,
but that's a fact of American jurisprudence.
And the Establishment Clause.
A little legal history or political history or whatever the correct word is, that the founders intended the Establishment Clause to bind the federal government. In other words, there would be no national religion. But at the time that the Establishment Clause was written, the independent sovereign states, and yes, we did lose that war, had established religions.
Some did, yeah.
Massachusetts did, for example. As Joe was saying when we were visiting earlier today, Rhode Island was notable for not having one. So Pennsylvania had one, Maryland. In Massachusetts, whatever version of Calvinism was the state religion there, you couldn't have a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
So, banned in Boston is a phrase for a reason.
Yeah. Well, by the way, you couldn't have a Christmas tree in Edinburgh until like the 1970s or something. but nonetheless, that's what the thing meant.
That's what it meant.
Yeah. There would not be a federally established religion.
But after the Civil War and the 14th Amendment, these were interpreted to bind the states. But then I do think that First Amendment jurisprudence went kind of crazy after about 1950. There's all kinds of crazy things in there. But let me just give you an example of what I mean, Joe. If I say, I need, say the county of San Diego says, we need a shelter for people who have severe mental illness. We need somewhere to house them. And then, so we're going to take bids for who can provide this shelter. And then the United Atheists of America bid, like, we'll build the shelter and we'll do it this way. And then the Catholic Church bids, and we'll build the shelter and do it this way. Under United States law, the county can award it to either one. You're not establishing a religion because somebody gave you a better bid. Why do people think that education is different than that? In my view, it's not. Like, you're not establishing a religion because these Christian schools offered the education that the parents wanted, and you were given out vouchers.
Well, if you're giving money to a Jewish school and a Catholic school and a Calvinist school or something, you're clearly not establishing a religion.
Right, yeah.
Right. And so this comes down to a question, not just of establishing a religion, but they've taken in Epperson v. Arkansas of 1968, there's the kind of no favoritism principle, which is that the First Amendment Establishment Clause means that you can't prefer one church over another, but you also can't prefer religion over non-religion, or, and this is a critical part, vice versa.
Yeah.
And so it requires government neutrality as to religion. And part of the issue here is, like, even determining what constitutes a religion, are the American atheists a religion when they deny religion?
Yeah.
Are Buddhists a religion? You know, there's difficult legal question about what constitutes an actual religion. And so getting
impossible,
the government...
not just difficult, really is impossible.
Right.
There's no human who could cut that Gordian knot.
And so it's true.
The founders didn't have any trouble with the word. I mean, this wasn't that long ago.
No,
but they're dealing with a pretty narrow set of Western religions.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you have agnosticism, atheism, Eastern religions on the table, even deism in some regard raises these questions.
Sure.
Like the definition of religion kind of explodes.
Okay, so in other words, so you're saying you can't favor non-religion
over
religion.
I would say
religion.
This was actually an extremely easy case to decide.
It, seems,
it should have been a
9-0. Yeah.
Because if you can't favor non-religion over religion, then if you have a law that says, since there are no public schools in this area, we will give money to private school A or private school B, you can't then say, private school B, you're disqualified because you teach about God. Because then you're favoring non-religion over religion.
So I would say, Cy, that there is perhaps a concern here about the establishment of a religion, but I really don't think that's at the heart of what's his name, Eli?
Elie Mystel.
Elie. Yeah, I don't think it's just kind of a hatred of Christianity. That's what it is, and maybe even specifically Catholicism, because we tend now in this case they weren't Catholic schools, but. The Catholic Church tends to run a lot of schools. But we saw the same thing here in California, Cy, with our friends at Children of the Immaculate Heart.
Yes,
This is a worthy organization that rescues young ladies, minor young ladies, from street trafficking. And for poor Grace Williams to get her refuge opened here in San Diego County, where they could begin to rehabilitate these girls, because it was a Catholic organization, they got all manner of harassment from the state of California.
Right.
I don't even know if they even brought up the question of establishment. They just found all kinds of licensing and other things such as, well, you know, if one of these girls is taking transgender therapy, then you're going to have to drive them to the appointments. Or if one of them wants an abortion, you're going to have to. And they had to get our friends Paul Joan and Chuck Lemandry involved to...
To sue the state of California, essentially.
Yeah, and they won.
Yeah. I think, right, the state settled with
but
them.
But it's hatred of Christianity. I don't even think they're that concerned. Because if they could establish the religion as, I don't know, relativism or whatever.
Well, yeah, exactly.
In
this case, the main law says that if you are a school that promotes a faith or belief system, then you're not
every single human has a faith or belief
system. Is a belief system. Like,
if you believe anything, then
if
you
you're conscious,
then you can't teach. How would you teach if you didn't believe anything?
Yes, right. I want to read what Elie Mystel writes, because he's one of the great charms of Elie Mystel is the absolutely over-the-top drama. The world is always ending, and it's always ending because of those horrible Christians. He says, now that the court has made this decision, there is no meaningful check anymore on whether conservatives will allow religious concerns. By the way, it was not conservatives who filed all the friend of the court briefs in this. It was conservatives, liberals, every kind of religious person was saying, this is clearly religious bigotry, but enough of that. There is no meaningful check anymore on whether conservatives will allow religious concerns to supersede secular laws. Can businesses run by religious people deny health care to women? Yes, according to Burwell versus Hobby Lobby stores.
False.
Can religious schools use public funds to upgrade their school playgrounds? Yes, according to Trinity Lutheran versus Comer.
Well, good.
Can the state be forced to give scholarship aid to students attending religious education? Yes, according to Espinoza versus Montana Department of Revenue. And it goes on and on and on like that, including that these evil churches were allowed to stay open during the pandemic.
I saw a college professor who pointed out that the same people who are getting just apoplectic about this in the next breath will tell you that the government needs to give tremendous amounts of money for student loan forgiveness for students who went to Liberty and BYU and everywhere else.
There's no logic to that.
There is none. Because and the government couldn't legally say, we'll forgive student loans if you went to a secular college and not if you went to a religious college.
No. Right.
And this is almost exactly the same case.
Well, it's interesting that the entire debate about funding schools is after preschool, because nobody ever fusses that the state funds the Lutheran preschool.
Right.
Nobody ever fusses. And it's before college. It's only in the elementary and
it's
high school.
It's almost as
years.
If there's an agenda to turn our kids into the progressive belief system.
No,
and that they're really just upset that they might not get to indoctrinate kids in rural Maine.
It couldn't be that.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that at the root of this, schools that are religious want to be on a level playing field. They want to say, you know, our kids will pass all the tests you want them to pass. Our kids will, you know, take the SAT or whatever, you know, whatever. We'll have the same fire standards as every other school. But we want to be on a fair playing field. If there's public money going to school to educate kids, we should be able to get our kids funded just as much as anybody else should.
And this is how everything else works. Like if you want to like build a building,
yeah,
whether it's a church or a shop or whatever it is, you can still have it adjacent to a public street and have, you know,
yeah,
egresses on it, and you're not discriminated against because it's a church instead of a 7-Eleven.
Do you know there's an entire country to the north of us that the government has supported Catholic schools since its beginning?
Yeah, yeah. A little bit more on this one, and then we'll move on to some more news right after this on the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity in The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at shop.catholic.com or pick it up at a good Catholic bookstore.
Can you defend the Church's teaching on the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist? Do you desire a deeper relationship with our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament? Join us September 22nd through 25th for the annual Catholic Answers Conference in San Diego. This year's theme is the Eucharist, I Am With You Always. Featuring all the Catholic Answers speakers and special guest Bishop Thomas Paprocki, use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live on Friday afternoons. From time to time, maybe every month or so, we get the Flannel Panel together and we discuss the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. Can't do it this Friday, but we had Joe in town, so we wanted to do it, and so we're doing it on a Wednesday. We're nothing if not flexible. We are not rigid, and anyone who accuses us of being rigid would be missing the point. We are flexible people here. If you want to get into the conversation, we'd love to have. We just had a good, nice guy. I thought a very nice conversation, but very interesting to me. The conversation we just had about the funding of religious schools, according the Supreme Court lifting the ban on funding religious schools, saying, well, basically that's just prejudice against religious schools, which basically it obviously is. If you got another take, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you want to straighten out something that we got wrong. 888-318-7884.
Chris? There is a little concern or something I think that Catholic schools need to be aware of with respect to government funding, whether they're, you know, vouchers or however it goes.
Which is?
Well, once you start taking the king's coin, then all men are regulations.
I don't know if I agree with that, because think of the church thriving in Germany with the amount of...
I can't tell if you're I am completely being sarcastic. It is very powerful there, despite no one going to the churches.
Yeah, right. We got the money. We just don't have anybody in the pews.
And so what they do now is they send it to all the countries that Germany invaded. So if you're in, like, Scandinavia or if you're in Eastern Europe, there's a good chance your churches are subsidized by German taxpayers.
Really?
Yeah, the German bishops send that money and... it's a fascinatingly corrupt system.
I would just say that a system that would respect more true religious liberty would be something like a tuition tax credit and not a direct voucher. Because if it is coming from the state, then the state gets involved in the curriculum of the school.
Well, I think you can, set it up such that, I mean, even with a voucher, there's basic curriculum standards that probably have to be met. And now I think
I'd rather not have the state.
Well, right.
In
I was about to
all.
Say, yeah. Voluntarily and freely, almost every Catholic institution at the primary and secondary level cooperates with state assessment standards.
Show me a diocese or archdiocese where the teachers are not certified by the state in which they're in.
Right.
Which is a problem. It is a huge problem.
Yeah. Because the kind of methods of education and what they expect
are
incompatible. And it's not just that they're trying to impose like this woke agenda, or not just that they're trying to impose like the rainbow agenda. It's like even more fundamentally, even before all of that, they're just deeply indebted to Dewey. And
yeah,
this
John
world,
Dewey's dumb ideas. You're absolutely right.
You know,
right.
Like their vision of education is broken apart from the religious claims.
Right.
Well, I'm going to stay with education for a minute, and we'll stay with Catholic education. I mean, there's some question about whether Catholic education is in every place. There's not really any question about it, as a matter of fact. There's a problem with Catholic schools in many places, some of them universities, some of them the lower schools, actually contradicting the church and doing the disservice of driving people away from the faith rather than forming people in the faith, and no longer seeing their primary task as forming people in the faith, but rather seeing their primary task as, you know, being in the list of top 100 universities or being a respected international thing or getting all their kids into these top universities as they leave high school. And these are all lower values. These are not higher values. We've lowered our values when we've gone to do this. So the question that I want to put before the two of you is, what does it mean if a Catholic school flies a Black Lives Matter flag and an LGBTQ plus flag over the school? Because one bishop, and I believe it was in Worcester, Massachusetts. Does anybody I'm looking it up.
That's right.
I've lost the article here, but said, no, you can't. You can't be a Catholic school and fly those flags. And
yeah, it was Worcester, Bishop McManus.
Well, this comes of what we were just talking about, and that is who, with whom the Diocese of America decide to staff their schools.
Okay, so tell me about.
Well,
that.
It's simply this: if the church in America, or the church more broadly, but if the church in America is going to insist that its teachers have a teaching certification from the state, then they are getting a certain demographic of college graduate who has had a fair amount of ideological training. Actually, even before the ideological training, someone who might even be inclined to subject himself to these ideas that really are about indoctrination and not about education. So this is what comes of several generations of staffing Catholic schools with state-certified teachers. And it's going to take a lot to undo.
Yeah, a lot to undo, including a lot of schools being lost to the Catholic Church. It doesn't seem to me that it's the worst thing in the world. It is a terrible tragedy that these schools were built by parents who were, in many cases, immigrant parents. Who it was a hard scrabble to build those schools, to staff those schools. They were staffed by women who devoted their lives, or men who devoted their lives to the religious life and wanted to be educators. So there's all this heroic stuff that built these schools. But if they're going to confuse people about the nature of the Catholic faith, let them go. Why keep them? Let them go. Say thank you so much, but call yourself something else now. That's
all. Well, have there not been occasions? There was one in Ohio, I think, where in fact ordinaries or superintendents have tried to intervene, and then they get faced with lawsuits. I think in the main, the church has been successful in this regard, but you know, the threat of it is there. Father Keyes gave a very fine homily at the Daily Mass today here at Catholic Answers on the feast of Thomas More and Thomas Fisher, Saints Fisher and More. And one of the things that he talked about was both these men were martyrs to unity, and in particular, unity with the papacy.
Right.
Yeah. But also more broadly, unity in the sense that, say, Henry VIII was able to separate his defense of the faith from his lust, or as some would try to argue, though it's not an easy case to make, his defense of the faith from his political interests of the realm.
No.
But the point that Father Keyes made was that the integrated man sees all the parts that are connected to the whole. So in the case of the schools, you'll have teachers, let's say, well, we can get a chemistry teacher. It really doesn't matter what his personal conduct is, if he's living with his girlfriend or his boyfriend or something, as long as he's competent in chemistry. Well, that isn't how the church understands the human person, and it really isn't how it understands education, because as Leo XIII said, or Pius XI, one or the other, said, every classroom needs to be suffused with Christian piety. So whether it's, and we've used this example here, the woman in Denver who had two Jesus through math in her classroom. So all of these parts are connected in the integrated life. The good teacher connects the parts to the whole. And if you're just getting somebody who's really competent at calculus but doesn't understand what the moral life is, well, then here's where you end up.
And so this is Pius XI, I suspect that you're referring to.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think
he's actually quoting Leo XIII. It's in Divini Ilias Magistri.
Well, there's several places. So yeah. The one I was thinking of was when he says, since education consists essentially in preparing man for what he must be,
yes,
and for what he must do here below in order to obtain the sublime end for which he was created, it is clear that there can be no true education which is not wholly directed to man's last end.
Right.
And then in the present order of providence, since God has revealed himself to us in the person of his only begotten Son, who alone is the way, the truth, and the life, there can be no ideally perfect education which is not Christian education.
So this bears repeating or summarizing. Before the Incarnation, even before the Incarnation, the Greeks, for example, understood that education was directed to the end of man.
Yes.
Whatever that would be. His
end meaning like the goal.
Yeah.
Like this is end in the sense of like ends justify the means.
Right. His
telos.
His perfection, or however you want to describe it, insofar as that was possible. That is still true. But since the Incarnation, we now know what man's end is.
Right.
It's
beautiful.
Union with God.
Right, right.
And so there cannot be...
But the primary goal of modern education, if I may say, the primary goal of modern education is state power. And they tell you that. We need to compete with other states. In order to compete in the world, we need the student to have this and that. The student is not the primary concern. The primary concern is the power of the state. And I don't understand why parents don't say that. Like, don't get mad at that. Say, my kid is not coming here in order to defeat the Japanese. My child is coming here to become a full human being.
Very few parents understand that's what the purpose of education is. Very few. A minority, and I would say a minority of Catholic parents understand that. But Cy, it's not. Education isn't sold as... I mean, you do hear that from time to time. We need to compete with the Japanese. But really, education, the best of it, is sold as training for your career. Now, in reality, so much of it is increasingly becoming just indoctrination in the modern religion, whatever it is. But most of it is now, well, you need to go get a four-year degree so that you can earn money.
It's utilitarian.
Yeah, it's entirely totally utilitarian. Right. Totally utilitarian. And, you know, by contrast, and I Nathaniel's going to start at Franciscan in the fall, and he and I were out there last week. It is extraordinary, this school, how explicit they are about what their purpose is. Sure, you're here to study philosophy. You're here to study nursing. you are here to become an evangelist, yeah. right? First of all, first and foremost, to get to heaven, yeah. right? And then become evangelist. They're explicit about it, right? I mean, even among the really good Catholic colleges, I don't know if there's one that is that explicit. It was really just inspiring.
It is inspiring to hear.
It just fired me up.
So the thing, however, the specifically this Bishop McManus in
can I speak to? I want to give another view on that because I think it's actually a little harder of a question than it seems to be.
Okay, that's what I wanted to get was the difficulty of what do these flags mean and do they in fact do what the bishop is saying they do? We have to take a break, and so I'm going to leave that as the tease.
Okay.
Sorry, Joe, you're first up. When we come back, more with the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live. Right after this.
Hang on, we'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Want the latest pro-life news? Want it delivered? Sign up. It's free. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, your source for everything happening now in the fight to protect the sanctity of human life. New episodes delivered every week to your inbox. So if you really want to know,
sign up today.
Go to EWTN.com/pro-life today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host. 2 hours today of the Flannel Panel, where we just sit around and talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. We do that with Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers and author of wonderful books, including Pope Peter, and Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. And it's always, at least for me, it's always a fun conversation, always enlightening. And we're talking right now about Bishop Robert McManus in the Diocese of Worcester, Massachusetts. Who is pilloried for his intolerance. And I doubt that Bishop McManus is an intolerant man. For some reason, the more a person is labeled as intolerant in the media, the more I think, I'd kind of like to get to know that person. I don't think that they probably are that intolerant.
You know, I think American Magazine actually had a very good piece on Bishop Olmsted from someone who'd worked in his office. And I don't remember all the details, but they'd worked with him. They didn't agree with him on a lot of things, but were really wowed by his compassion and care for people. For those who don't know, Bishop Olmsted is the recently retired Bishop of Phoenix.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of crowing about his retirement from those who disagree with him and imagine him as this like arch-conservative, monstrous like culture warrior. But those who've worked with him said, no, he's an incredibly caring and compassionate. Yeah. And so this person who'd worked in the chancery gave a story about him staying up late, staying well after like everyone else had gone home, just talking with the security guard, just seemingly like unaware that, you know, the day had ended, he could just get lost and go home, that there was something just incredibly pastoral about him.
Yeah.
And that gets lost in the kind of media caricatures.
I'll tell you what, I think there's a lot of bishops and priests about which that probably could be said. I mean, there's just, it's hidden from us mostly, but we're so unfair to them, the way we pile on them. But so Bishop McManus is taking exactly the lumps he knew he was going to take when he did this, right. I'm sure. I don't know Bishop McManus, but he doesn't seem to be a fool, so he knew he was going to take these lumps. So, Joe, you wanted to say something about the meaning of flying the black fly, Black Lives Matter.
The black
matter.
Flag is anarchist. This is a different thing.
The Black Lives Matter flag and the LGBTQ plus rainbow flag above a Catholic school.
Yeah. So to give voice to at least the argument that the school is making, this is Nativity School in Worcester. And it's a Jesuit-run school that's tuition-free and serves a largely minority population.
It's a high school?
It's that's a good question. I think
is this like one of those Cristo Rey schools? Is it?
I think it's a similar kind of model from what I can tell.
Do you know, Edgar? Is it a Cristo Rey school?
Look it up for us, will you?
It's Jesuit run, so I don't think it's Crystal.
It sounds like
it, but it's a similar model.
The Crystal Ray schools are Jesuit schools.
Are they?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Well, in any case, they in act of what they viewed as solidarity, flew the Black Lives Matter flag, and then as what they viewed as an act of solidarity with what they call LGBTQ plus people. And their argument was Pope Francis has encouraged this kind of outreach, and the USCCB's supports the spirit and movement of Black Lives Matter. I'm quoting from the president of the school now. He says, both flags are now widely understood to celebrate the human dignity of our relatives, friends, and neighbors who have faced and continue to face hate and discrimination. Though any symbol or flag can be co-opted by political groups or organizations, flying our flags is not an endorsement of any organization or ideology. They fly in support of marginalized people.
That is literally false.
Oh, yeah.
You fly a thing that says Black Lives Matter on it, you're supporting the institution Black Lives Matter. That's
this
literally
is, yeah, this,
what you
this
are doing.
This is the tricky part. And I think a lot of people who fly the flags would probably say, oh, I don't agree with everything BLM does. But
they're just
kind of
flying their flag.
Well, it's a strange thing, isn't it?
I can tell you if I flew or hung in my office here the Confederate battle flag, I could not get away with saying, no, guys, you don't understand. I'm just for states' rights.
Yeah, try sailing through the Straits of Malacca flying a skull and crossbones. Yeah. Like,
right.
The flag is the thing you are endorsing. That's the purpose of flying a flag.
Yeah, so I take them to be more or less well-intentioned there. And like, okay. I believe them there, but I think they're wrong. Like, I think
that's
that when you fly a flag
right,
like that,
they are wrong. That's all I'm saying.
Like, even if you have the most benign intention,
and to the
your private thought about the meaning of a flag is not the only thing that matters. It's also what does that objectively convey to everyone around you. And I think the Confederate flag example is a great example.
Yeah.
That you can say, for me, this is heritage, it's not hate. For me, this is about states' rights. But the symbol itself is so intractably connected with something else.
Right.
That it communicates that whether you mean it to or not.
Sure.
Like you might like, the swastika as an old Sanskrit good luck symbol, but you don't get to use that anymore. It's gone as a good luck symbol.
Remember the guy in India who put swastikas all across the front of his store? And it was that. And people were like, you can't do that. Like, tourists would come by and he didn't know that the Nazis had used it. He literally didn't know. but he had it. He still had to take it all down. Because
exactly.
If you fly the swastika, you are endorsing Nazism, even if you didn't know it.
And so it's that idea. Like maybe they had, and I take them seriously. They're not trying to endorse particular movements or organizations with either of these flags, but because of their use in very obvious political movements, it gives that signal. And whatever the case, when push came to shove, the bishop, who has the authority in the diocese, told them you need to take it down, and they refused to. And that act of disobedience is enough to say, okay, well, you're not acting in a Catholic spirit here.
No, and
right, they have an obligation at very least of dialogue. I mean, but ultimately,
and he told them, like,
to
if
obey.
You don't take it down, I will remove your ability to call yourself a Catholic school.
And he followed through.
Yeah,
which is I don't think Catholic bishops are supposed to do that, are they?
No,
I think it's part of being a Catholic bishop. You're not supposed to follow through.
I don't mind them having some way of trying to express like we are here for marginalized people. You might just have to be a little more creative about it.
Like that's it. Like, because
this is why I don't. I'm not as open to believing
the goodwill.
Their genuineness as you are, Joe, and probably you have a better formed heart than I. In fact, I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
But
he does.
But this to me, this rhetoric that you quote there to me very much. Manifest the similar kind of rhetoric that you would see in a James Martin article, and to me the evidence that is more likely the case than not is the subsequent disobedience.
Yeah, I mean that may be. But the guy who the president, if I'm not mistaken, was formerly with Harvard, and so his formation. I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, there's good people at Harvard though. Marianne Glendon taught at Harvard.
Fair enough.
But
go back a little further, and you can find more people.
But on the Black Lives Matter one, it seems to me that it would be very easy to remedy that by, fly a flag of William Wells Brown or, of Harriet Tubman or something. Like that you specifically chose an association there. Right. But with the LGBTQ plus, two things. Are we still pretending that this is a marginalized group? Because I don't think that pretense holds up anymore. And secondly, Are we pretending that Christianity, and this one really, I mean deeply and profoundly, I am not trying to say a clickbait thing or what something, whatever they call it nowadays. Are we really supposed to pretend that the teaching of Jesus Christ on human sexuality is compatible with the sexual revolution? I don't mean compatible with LGBTQ plus people. This flag is a symbol of the sexual revolution. Whatever else you might want to say about who we want to walk with and the marginalized people, this flag is flown in the face of Christians. It is not flown in a neutral way. And particularly, it's a rejection of Christ's own teaching on human sexuality.
To this very point, Cy, I just want to make very, very clear the expression
LGBTQ plus. I wrote it down in front of me.
Thank you. This is not the language of the church.
No.
The church does not use this language. There are churchmen who do use this language.
Sure.
But that's not the language of the church.
Because it defines people by their inclinations.
Correct.
Which is
correct. Or
which
their
is
action.
Such a reductionistic way. Yep. Years and years and years ago, I heard a talk by Father Paul Scalia, and he pointed out that Fred Phelps in the Westboro Baptist Church, which was viciously bigoted and hateful.
Yeah, you can't even repeat what he said.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And the kind of rainbow movement had in common this reductionist view of the human person. Right. You are no more than your sexual attractions and your orientation. That's
or your deviant behavior, whatever.
Right, that's what we're going to define you as. And that the Christian response to all of that is, no, you're a beloved son or daughter of God.
Yeah.
Like, you've got your struggles, I've got mine, so be it. But you're a beloved daughter or son of God. And that's what the church ought to be saying to marginalized people, because that's the actual Christian message. Yeah.
I have an idea of a symbol that you could fly to identify with all marginalized people, and in fact identifies God with all marginalized people.
Yes.
And it's the symbol that we euphemistically perhaps refer to as the crucifix.
Yes. The Sam Daniel cross right here.
Right.
Is Christ with everybody.
But they'll say yes, but many people misunderstand the crucifix. They see it as that's the point that the bishop is making to you about the flag.
The nature of semiotics. Your understanding of a symbol and somebody else's may not be the same.
What that cross means is better than any other symbol you could put on top of a Catholic church. And come get your act together and put it up there and teach what it means. Teach what it means about love for every single human being.
Yeah.
Not about tolerance. It's not the cross is not a symbol of tolerance. It's a symbol of love, about the active mercy that God has for every single human being.
He doesn't just tolerate us. He actually loves us.
Yes. I would be very nervous around a God who just tolerated me.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he loves you more than you love yourself.
Even at your lowest, even in the midst of your sin, right? Like that is an actually profound transformative message for those who may be feeling unloved, for those who may be feeling incompatible with the Christian life, whatever the case may be. Like that message actually is really good to go out to the margins.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, taking them at their word, taking the best view, I think you're right that the cross is the answer there. I mean, it's obvious in a way.
But we don't believe in it. I think that's the problem, is we do believe in the LGBTQ plus flag, but we don't believe in the crucifix. We believe in liberation movements of the 20th century, but we don't believe in the liberation of man from sin and death by Christ's sacrifice on the cross.
And I'll just, at the risk of taking a step too far into political discussions, what has Black Lives Matter accomplished? It's idle.
Some of them got really, really
rich,
expensive houses.
Yes, that's true.
But
in terms
really
of like
nice
criminal
houses.
Justice reform, in terms of all these things, playing the really provocative game of playing with racial politics in a U.S. context hasn't been good for minorities. It's been good for activists. It has not been good for the people allegedly being activated for.
No.
In response, like, we can see the actual good being done, including, for instance, you know, schools that are providing tuition-free education for low-income students. Like, that's actual Christian good. Like,
we have
hundreds of years of track records of actually doing something, not just, like, waving a flag and saying good luck.
Yeah, yeah. And the invocation of Pope Francis, I think, is disingenuous as well. I mean, Pope Francis has said the transgender movement is demonic. That's what he said. He used the word demonic. I didn't. And so you...
You kind of used it.
And, no, but I wait a second. I did use it. You're right, Joe. But do you see what I'm saying? I have to say, I think Bishop McManus has done right. I don't know much about it. I mean, there may have been other things that, you know, he could have done. I have no idea, but I'm glad to see bishops saying to Catholic schools, you're not Catholic anymore, when the fact is, they're not Catholic anymore. Right back
like,
with more
like
final
send
panel.
Send him a free copy of your book, Si.
Let's do it.
To Bishop
oh, that
McManus.
Lucky bishop.
Yeah.